KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Sunnyvale, California.
Oakland, California.
Oakland, California.
North Oakland.
North Oakland.
North Berkeley.
Coming up, we'll explore a new program designed to give communities ravaged by the war on drugs a leg up in the legal pot industry.
When you say, hey, we are going to better a community, and these are the ways that we're going to do it, the world will watch.
Quality in the cannabis business. Then we'll head to a quiet cemetery in East Oakland that hides a long history.
This cemetery, when it was first founded, had the exclusionary clauses that a lot of cemeteries in those days had. They didn't allow Jewish people buried here. They didn't allow people of color buried here.
A closer look at Evergreen Cemetery and some of its people, past and present. African Americans are disproportionately arrested for marijuana charges. That's true nationwide and also in Oakland. More than three quarters of people there arrested for having pot in 2015 were African American. Meanwhile, almost all of the city's medical marijuana dispensaries are white owned, meaning white people in Oakland are profiting off pot while African Americans are serving time for it. Now that California has legalized recreational marijuana, Oakland officials are trying to instill some equity into the business. One idea is to set aside marijuana business licenses specifically for people impacted by the war on drugs. But critics say that's an impractical approach, and it has some pot entrepreneurs wanting to take their businesses elsewhere. KALW's Holly J. McDeed reports.
One more. Have a little breakfast at Champions.
Chip Moore is what he calls a lifelong weed enthusiast.
You know, cannabis culture is real. There was a time it was locked in the shadows and people were quiet about it. And, you know, I've seen it in my lifetime.
He runs a cannabis collective based in an undisclosed location in Oakland. It's called 420 Blackbirds. You know, like the nursery rhyme. When Californians voted to legalize recreational weed for adults last November, thousands geared up for the potential pot bonanza. Moore wants to set up shop and bring his cannabis collective out into the open, green Oakland grass. His dream is to set up a space for people to feel free to talk weed, eat edibles, exchange ideas, and feel creative and inspired.
We want to have a positive effect. We want to be an anchor of that community.
But Moore, as an African-American cannabis enthusiast knows, historically, it hasn't been easy for people who look like him to sell weed. And even though it's largely legal in California now, that doesn't wipe away the past.
We can't recognize where we are now without all of those people who have, you know, come before us. And that's on the corners and that's in the jails. So that's more of my world.
The city of Oakland is trying to create a better world for people like Chip Moore. So they're organizing business meetups, like this cannabis mixer at City Hall, to help people connect. Everyone from the prosperous cannabis businessman to the drug dealer who served time behind bars is here to learn how to apply for a permit, to get involved in Oakland's legal weed world. Today's lesson starts out on a more philosophical than practical note.
But I want to talk a little bit about the arc of the moral universe that it bends toward justice.
That's Darlene Flynn, Oakland's first ever race and equity director. Her job is to help right past wrongs against African Americans and Latinos. And she wants to stake out her place in the history of civil rights victories.
Brown versus the Board of Education, and of course the Fair Housing Act of 1968.
And she says, in between those big milestones.
In between those big things, lots of little things, like what we're doing today, like what we're about in this equity program that we put together for cannabis, lots of little.
Cannabis. Flynn sees legalized weed as the next civil rights frontier. When she started last fall, her first task was to study the impact of weed arrests on equality in Oakland.
The inequities in Oakland, the racial inequities in Oakland, are as stark as ever. They're not getting better. And there's a way in which the city's policies have contributed to that, and that we can tell.
Under the equity program, half of the permits the city issues to new marijuana business ventures must go to those who have been negatively impacted by the war on drugs. That could mean they lived in an Oakland police beat with a huge number of pot arrests, or they have a weed-related conviction. Only Oakland residents can apply for these equity permits. It's a deliberate way of helping people of color beat the odds, kind of like affirmative action for weed.
The fact that we acknowledge the disparities and own them in the report that we put out signals to the community, I think, that we're at least trying to move into a new era where things will be more fair and equitable.
But Robert Selna, a lawyer who represents marijuana businesses, says all these rules could keep some weed entrepreneurs away from Oakland. If half of the permits are set aside for a certain type of applicant, he says, that doesn't leave enough for everybody else.
Whether it has to do with somebody's income or somebody's residence or somebody's race, if you have a narrow criteria for an applicant versus a wide criteria for an applicant, you're going to get a lot more applications from the one that's broader than you are from the narrow criteria. There just aren't going to be as many people applying. And so immediately you have a application process where there's going to be a bottleneck.
And fewer applicants, he says, could mean less tax revenue for Oakland. Much of that same tax revenue is already earmarked for cannabis job training for low-income communities.
Why would you reduce the number of permits you're issuing and therefore the taxes that you're generating through that program? It was a self-defeating approach.
It's not just the big shot lawyers who are worried. At an art gallery in Oakland, Chip Moore, the weed enthusiast, is in his element at a First Friday party, surrounded by like-minded people who love weed and the whole culture that comes with it.
And tonight we're celebrating our company, our friends, our family, our network, and how far we've come in this struggle. So it's a celebration.
Moore has a lot of reasons to throw a pot party. He's found a building in Oakland to set up what he's calling a cannabis cultural center. But he says this equity application process has slowed him down. Moore lives in Berkeley, so he's just out of reach of Oakland equity permits.
We are the poster child for the equity program. So for Oakland to be like, oh, let's slow you guys down. And for the parameters they've chosen, that's what hurts.
But for Moore, it's bigger than that. Oakland officials have described the equity program as a way of paying reparations for past wrongs.
Reparations is a powerful word. When you say, hey, we are going to better a community, and these are the ways that we're going to do it, the world will watch. And make no mistake, there are emerging markets that are watching now if this will work.
And if it doesn't work?
One, the word reparations takes a hit. And as an African American, I don't like that. And then two, the idea of creating equity within the cannabis industry, it loses its importance, right? Tried, let's move on. And we don't want people to say, oh, we tried that, let's move on, right? There's not gonna be a second shot at this.
But for the city's race and equity director, Darlene Flynn, that's exactly why trying this equity program now matters. And to people saying Oakland's going to lose money on this?
First of all, we don't know what the revenue is, so we're speculating. All this revenue we could be losing, or all this revenue that we're going to be gaining, or we don't know. It's all highly speculative at this point in time.
And even if there is a ton of money to be made,
we think, well, if we just rush ahead and collect the revenue, then we'll be ahead of the game. And we never factor in the cost of leaving people behind and leaving people out. So we may get more revenue and have more poverty. And have you gotten ahead when you do that?
The permitting process just began last spring, and the applications are rolling in. Some will get the green light to enter the pot market. Others may have to wait in line. But remember, the arc of the moral universe is long. Come January, the new era of legal weed will begin in California. For Cross Currents in Oakland, I'm Holly J. McDeed.
Holly J. McDeed is our justice reporter. If you've got a story you'd like her to report, email her at justice@klw.org. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. This next piece is in collaboration with our friends at Oakland Voices, a project where East Oakland residents tell the stories of their own neighborhoods. Evergreen Cemetery has been in East Oakland's Elmhurst neighborhood for over a century, and that means it's experienced the changes in this city, from the neighborhood around it to the people buried and cremated there. There's enough history of Oakland in that place to write a book, make a movie, or teach a university class. To help uncover that storied past, we turn to Oakland Voices correspondent Damu Daly.
Some people have lived in Oakland for decades and don't even know Evergreen Cemetery exists. It has an unobstructed view in East Oakland where the hills start to climb above the flatlands of Foothill Boulevard, where the lights of the Coliseum can be seen flashing at the sky in bright, expansive rhythms. It's deep in the east near the prestigious grounds of Mills College. It's also remarkably near the notorious killing fields of Seminary Avenue. Why am I at the graveyard in East Oakland right now? I come here to wait when I arrive early for my appointments with my barber and friend, JB. He lives only a couple blocks from Evergreen.
I've been seeing a lot of people just even in the morning, just jogging around, just jogging at nighttime, jogging. I mean, if you know the history of this place, it's hard to get over what you know.
Yeah. As a teenager, I practiced a play on Evergreen's grounds. Ironically, it has always been one of the safest places to keep away from the violence of the East Oakland streets. A place where I can see all people coming from all sides, for miles around. While at Evergreen, I begin to wonder, what is this cemetery's story? I really had no idea. Luckily, I got the chance to meet the owner, Buck Camphausen.
The world-famous undertaker.
No, really. That's actually what it says in cursive on the back of Buck's business card. Buck bought Evergreen Cemetery in 1973.
I think the A's were... The A's might have won a championship in 1970s.
Yes. That's one of the big advantages here. You know, we've sold property here because it overlooks the stadium. So we have ball players that have bought here.
Ball players aren't the only ones buried here for the view. Take jazz pianist Earl Father Hines, who died in 1983. He played with Louis Armstrong, Sarah Vaughan, Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie, and even as part of the house band inside of Al Capone's Chicago Speakeasy.
Earl Father Himes is buried here. He's a jazz great, and he went around to all the cemeteries around this area, in the Bay Area. One, he liked the attitude of our people here, and two, he liked the view. So we have sold these cemetery, but you wouldn't think, but that's a lot of people look at that.
So when you say places, people about places, you mean like slots?
Grave, yeah.
You mean grave slots?
Yes, uh-huh.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking like real estate homes or something.
No. We don't sell that.
Walking around Evergreen, I see other notable people from entertainment and business buried here. Alan Clayton Hoskins, who played Buckwheat from the TV show The Little Rascals. C.L. Bess, who started the Global Caterpillar Tractor Company in nearby San Leandro. Then, there are the Hells Angels.
We've had many, many big funerals here.
But
the Hells Angels, there, we can take you over there and show you that. There's a whole line of them. They have about 10 other graves still available. But there's a grave over there, it's Magoo. And Magoo was one of the founders of the Hells Angels. Most of the graves over there are from the founders.
I'm meeting Buck with radio producer Jeremy Dalmas, and he's letting us in on some of the more astounding things that have happened at Evergreen. Like the time a local serial killer decided Evergreen's crematory would be the perfect place to dispose of victims' bodies.
He chewed them on the street. There were actually murders committed here.
The killer realized it would be even less trouble to shoot them dead right there on Evergreen's site.
No. Let me tell you what's unique.
Wait, he shot someone at the crematory?
Yes.
And then
he told our employee that, I know where your family lives. If you say anything, I'll kill you.
I don't believe Buck knew he would have stories such as these to tell when he purchased Evergreen Cemetery. And from the looks of the original announcement of Evergreen's opening, neither did the founders. Here's the rather peaceful story in the Oakland Tribune on February 18, 1903.
Work on the Evergreen Cemetery, the new burial grounds that are located between Elmhurst and Seminary Avenue, is progressing rapidly. The grounds have been surveyed and preparations are now being made to put in the driveways, walks, and flower beds. Trees will also be planted shortly. The location of the new cemetery is one of the best that could be secured for that purpose. It is situated on a rise of land at the base of the foothills and commands a view of the valley and the bay for miles around.
A wonderful place to rest in peace is what anyone might think. But what the Tribune did not mention that day was the long list of people that would be denied a plot upon request. Even though Evergreen opened almost 40 years after the Civil War ended, it was still segregated, a strong selling point for potential customers at the time.
This cemetery, when it was first founded, had the exclusionary clauses that a lot of cemeteries in those days had. They didn't allow Jewish people buried here. They didn't allow people of color buried here, nor Asian people here.
By the 1970s, when Buck bought Evergreen, selling spaces to an underserved community was the best idea. The cemetery could no longer function as a segregated place, especially since the neighborhood was now primarily full of people of color. Buck was the right owner to change with the times.
I was young, enthusiastic, and energetic. And I saw an opportunity here. I had to borrow $10,000 for a down payment. We came out here and promoted it within the black community. They responded, and we were doing approximately 600 burials a year, which was a major change for this cemetery.
600 burials comes to nearly two people per day, every day, for a year. If death is like a toll bridge we all must cross one day, East Oakland has many more people in the line than others. But in many ways, Buck reminds me of Evergreen's neighbor, my barber, JB. They're both just honest, straightforward, front porch type people, country smart. They are the type to own simple businesses and provide services that real people in the neighborhood actually need to live, a toll booth business. JB would be smart and shrewd enough to cut Donald Trump's hair if he could, just like Buck has the down-home laugh and wit of your favorite barber. I once even asked JB if he would cut Trump's hair just to see what he would say. And just in case you were wondering, JB said he would cut Trump's hair. Better than he's getting cut right now.
Would you change it up or would you?
No, I couldn't change it up because he got a comb over on top. So you got to be real gentle with that and it has to match the top. So.
Oh, okay.
Couldn't do too much with it. I may be a little bit tighter around the back area right around here, but that's about it.
But to own a cemetery in the black community during the crack epidemic, which began in the 80s, in the middle of a drug turf war, and the war on drugs by the government, this was the closest thing to striking oil for a businessman. Black gold in the ground for miles around. This reality was unforeseeable to Buck, who purchased a bankrupting cemetery in 1973. Oakland had become a war zone to me and my friends in the 80s and 90s. But to the older generation, passing on during this time of chaos and uncertainty in the black community, Evergreen gave them one long final view to go lay in beauty forever. Some wearied after a life of exhaustively dancing within the electroshock color lines of America. Can I ask you about the Huey situation?
Huey Newton?
Yeah.
Of course, the Black Panthers were in this neighborhood. And we got to know the Black Panthers very well. They came around with food. They did a lot of cooking in churches and so forth. Mm-hmm. But they fed a lot of people. I think you probably, all the good things they did.
You're talking about the schools in the neighborhood?
Yes, yes. And so they come in here because burials were being made here within the community. And we bought food from them. We were one of their main stops, you know. So they would come in here at noon, and they did wonderful cooking. Mm-hmm. So you had the people in here. So we had a unique relationship with them that way.
A man whose name became synonymous with black militancy in the 1960s was shot to death early this morning in Oakland, California. Huey Newton, a co-founder of the Black Panther Party, had been shot several times. He was 47.
Huey P. Newton was cremated at Evergreen Cemetery. For an Oakland native like myself, holding Huey Percy Newton's death certificate is like holding a piece of American history.
You getting hot?
Yeah, are you getting thirsty?
Yeah, this is a job for Kool-Aid.
Oh, yeah!
Have you heard of the phrase, don't drink the Kool-Aid? Well, this comes from the Jim Jones massacre that happened in Guyana in 1978.
Good evening. The news from Guyana is even worse than we thought yesterday. All of the bodies that have been sighted have now been airlifted out, but in still another almost unbelievable turn of events, another 135 bodies were found today, and authorities now believe the final death count will be about 910 people.
More than 900 people died in mass murders and forced suicides from fruit punch mixed with poison. Nearly half are buried here at Evergreen, most of them children. Studying the Jonestown's victims' pictures inside the memory book at Evergreen make it real to me. The book has far more kids in it than adults. The ratio looks like the same amount of teachers and kids in an actual middle school yearbook. They remind me of my 6th and 7th grade classmates in North Oakland. Some look like me. I feel bad for never understanding how bad it really was, but now, I also understand why hundreds of multicolored bodies were denied entry by several cemeteries before Buck said yes. It made sense now, like 1903. They were probably told they had no more room, but good people of the world will always need someone like Buck to step in and do what's right when no one else will.
They were afraid to come. And then all of a sudden they came here, and the emotional breakdown was unbelievable.
We say goodbye to Buck, and he hands us over to Giovanni Morga, the head of cremations at Evergreen Cemetery.
I was a manager for Macy's for 10 years. I was a visual manager. That, well, you know what that is? It's a glorified name for a managing dummies. So I came to this world. I like it. It's kind of cool. It's cool because it's a lot of responsibility.
As Giovanni gives us a tour behind the scenes, he's extremely proud of the new human cremation equipment that warms up in the background. These modern machines are high tech and very green, he says. But not everyone is built for the type of work a cremator does.
It's something that's part of the world, part of the life. People do not want to deal with, or the people that are intrigued over it. I had an operator going through training. He must have been the strongest guy I've ever seen. Tall gentleman. But when he walked in the cooler and saw an infant baby, he couldn't take it anymore. So that's why I said, it's your aesthetics. It's your what you're made out of. Could you handle it or not?
Driving away from Evergreen, my mind wanders over the stories Buck told us. In particular, I'm thinking about the local serial killer, the one who took over the crematory by holding employees hostage and killing victims he brought up there alive. The killer was eventually buried at Evergreen.
Ironically, that guy was killed, the killer was killed, and he's buried up behind the mausoleum where the crematory smokestack on a certain time, that smokestack comes right across his grave. Isn't that, it's kind of an ironic situation.
The Oakland police like to humble brag about the murder rate in Oakland. They say it's lower than it has been in years. But it's still high enough for me to be extra vigilant and cautious on casual trips to visit my barber while in the neighborhood. Maybe it has changed like they all say, and I only hide out at the cemetery because of muscle memory. But I wouldn't bet my life on it, just yet. Nonetheless, I do see high-tech classes moving in and beautiful diversity moving out. No matter how much things around here change for better or worse, Evergreen will always be here to stay. At least it will live forever as it was, with people underground and beneath the hills. To me, this is at the core of Oakland's spirit, something that no t-shirt or cute phrase has ever captured. Now, Evergreen's grounds are full, and there are no more burial plots available. But Buck continues to provide cremation services for all who ask, and without prejudice. In Oakland, I'm Damu Daly for Cross Currents.
That That's Oakland Voices correspondent Damu Daly. That story was produced by Jeremy Dalmas and edited by Lisa Morehouse. It's part of KALW's Sights and Sounds of East Oakland project. It's a collaboration with Oakland Voices, a community media training program run in partnership with the East Bay Times and the Maynard Institute for Journalism Education. We've since partnered up with Richmond-based community organizations to bring you the Sights and Sounds of Richmond, a live event. It's happening this Sunday afternoon, showcasing the arts and artists of the city of Richmond. It's at East Bay Center for the Performing Arts, and all the information is on our website, kalw.org. Click Cross Currents. And that's all for Cross Currents today. Our team includes Andy Bosselman, Nina Gensler-Deb, Sonia Hudson, Angela Johnston, Judy Silber, Jackie Sojiko, Andrew Seltzer, and Laura Wenis. Today's show is engineered by James Rollins. The line producer is Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien, and our news director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Today's local music is by Kelly McFarling. She's been in San Francisco for about 10 years, and she's released 5 albums in that time. She'll be performing songs, old and new, at Café du Nord in San Francisco tomorrow. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
There are so many ways for the day to arrange when it breaks on you and me.